Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the Sander Lanch podcast. Today, we're going to be talking about chapters 58 and 59 of The Way of Kings by Brandon Sanderson, wherein Adolin hangs out with some of his friends. Then Dalinar and Elikar and Sadeas watch a duel while discussing The Way of Kings. And in Kaladin's chapter, he experiments a little bit with his powers after they get told that they will be on bridge duty all the time from now on. They get to be on bridge duty during the day and work in the chasms at night, and it'll be awesome. So he decides that he's got to figure a way out of that. I'm Data, and discussing these chapters with me today is
Joe,
Jack,
and Jamie.
So hang on to something, everybody. The Sander Lanch is about to begin. So yeah, two chapters, and I don't know that I feel like they're the most eventful chapters, especially at this point, like 80% of the way into the book, but there's some interesting stuff going on, I feel like. What did you guys think of these two chapters?
Well, I was really bummed out at first when it was Adolin in the first chapter, and I was like, oh man, this guy again?
We're going to hear more about his girlfriends, jeez.
Yeah, exactly, and we did hear more about his girlfriends, but this one seems all right, I guess. No, actually, I was pleasantly surprised that he's actually like thinking some things through. I think I wrote this moment down because I was like, this is like a watershed moment. And, you know, he's not quite an idiot in this moment. He's like, oh, he has like an epiphany. He's like, oh, that's why my dad wants us to stick to the coats. It like means something. And like when he has that moment while walking to his duel, I'm like, yeah, dingbat. Like there's a purpose behind it. He doesn't do it just because he thinks it looks cool. It's like there's a reason that it exists.
Who knew?
Like, yeah, exactly. So like at that point, I was like, okay, maybe this guy's not such a bastard. And then thankfully, we switch over to Dalinar, and we see some really good progress with Elikar and Sadeas and both. And, you know, it kind of makes us hopeful. But then, you know how Brandon books are. If I get hopeful, then I start to worry. Like, oh, no. Things are starting to look up, which means things are about to start looking down. So I was a little hesitant to be excited about this, especially then moving into the Kaladin chapter. And he's starting to understand how to use his powers. And he's got, you know, they get some bad news, but it seems like he's got some kind of plan. So then again, it's like things might be looking up, but then also I'm scared things are going to start looking down. So, you know, it's a roller coaster of emotions. But I actually did really enjoy these chapters. They almost came face to face with the Chasm Fiend, which was scary. So I'm excited to see what happens next. And at the point when they're discussing, like, Sadeas is like, oh, Dalinar, you need to take on my bridge cruise. It's going to make things better. I literally wrote down, finally, because I was like, this is how that we get the thing that we said is going to happen. It's going to happen. So hopefully it will happen.
Yeah. What are the odds that it's not bridge Kaladin's four? Bridge crew that ends
the
up
the fact
with
that they're now having to do it every day. It seems almost impossible that it's not going to be at some point.
Right. Yeah.
Even if it doesn't happen the first time, like if it goes well, and they keep doing it, eventually I feel like it's going to happen. Unless they all escape before that happens.
Oh, that's true. That would be a good thing, right?
If they all yeah. Escape. I don't think that's what's going to happen, but, you know, a man can think, maybe.
A man can dream, can't he?
That's a man can dream.
I invented the Finglonger.
But you're right. It's a roller coaster of emotion, these Brandon things. And where, I mean, it's still it's a big book, right? So there's still time for ups and downs. But I'm just like, we're entering like the final fifth of the book with these chapters there, because there's not that much more times for Brandon to go like, oh, is it going to look up for us? No, it's not.
Yeah. Come on, Brandon. Figure it out.
He's
get
figured
your
it
shit
out.
Together.
Yeah. It's not as if you're already four books, almost five books into this thing. Hurry up. Figure it out.
Yeah, these chapters were fine. I agree. I didn't think they were the most eventful. And I think we've had a few chapters where it's like, oh man, shit's heating up. Things are getting interesting. We've had Hoid telling stories and all this other crazy crap going on. This one felt a bit lower key than the last few bunches we've done. Not that's a bad thing, but just at this point in the book, it caught me a bit off guard. I'm like, oh, that was not quite as exciting as I was expecting. I thought we were entering the Sandalanche. This must be like the last little respite we get before it. But yeah, no, I enjoyed it. I enjoyed Dalinar talking to Elikar and Sadeas. I think that was probably my favorite part of the chapters. But I do love that they just randomly fucking Chasm Fiend right there. Shit, which way is it going? Because it caught me completely off guard. I know we've been talking about, oh yeah, you see Chasm Fiends in the chasms, but we've been down there so many times and we hadn't seen any sign of them. We sort of just forget about them, and then all of a sudden, oh shit, there's one.
Well, Kaladin keeps being like, they're not really around here.
Yeah.
So close to the camp.
Yeah. that was just a fun little, whoa, what the fuck? Yep. I mean, my monster movies.
It's, yeah, they're just out there waiting to jump out and eat you, these chasm fiends, because as we've established, it took at least three shard bearers, four if you count Sadeas with his arrows, to take down the chasm fiend before. We've got an unarmed or mostly unarmed bridge crew down here. They're not going to be murdering any chasm fiends, probably.
Imagine how pissed all the high princes are going to be when bridge four kills a chasm fiend.
Sadeas is just like, oh, well, I never hear the end of these people.
Yeah, because Kaladin's just that awesome.
No, Kaladin's not going to kill it. He's going to tame it.
He's going to recruit it.
Yep. he's going to ride it. It's like, oh, here I go, guys.
It's like it just climbs up out of the chasm. He's sitting on its back. They fashioned a bridle. And he just walks it over to the bridge, smashes it, flips Sadeas the bird, and the bridge four rides on the chasm fiend off into the sunset.
And they're like, oh,
who's gonna stop him?
Yeah, he's gonna lash himself to it. That's what he's gonna do.
That's what I said. How's he gonna tame the chasm fiend? Yeah.
Yeah, if he lashes himself to it and just keeps riding until it knocks him off,
I guess like
that's
a rodeo
the way to do it. Yeah, exactly. It's like, oh, he lasted 8 seconds. He wins.
It's been 8 seconds. I guess I'll stop.
I guess I'll stop.
It's Kaladin. He befriends everyone, as long as they're not a high prince. He befriended all Bridge Four, some of them by punching them, so it could work for a Chasm Fiend.
He does like to punch.
Now I'm imagining a montage, like in How to Train Your Dragon, where he's discovering what the Chasm Fiends like and don't like in order to make friends
with them. Hey, Shen, help me out here. Shen's like, the fuck you want me to do?
Yeah. Who do you think I am?
You're kind of crab-like. He's kind of crab-like. Right? He's like, excuse me? How dare Shen's you,
like,
sir?
That is hateful. I'm like, man, I liked you better when you were mute.
I mean, I guess the Parshendi aren't... I mean, so the Parshendi that they fight have, like, the armor that they're growing, like, which is maybe kind of... chitinous, as Joe said before. I don't know. So maybe they're like crabs. The Parshmen, like Shen, not particularly. They don't have the armor even, so they're not like all that crabby, I guess.
Significantly less percentage of crab.
Lower human to crab ratio. Or human ratio, whichever.
Yeah, look, I like these chapters. There wasn't a lot going on. I did find, as in like action-y wise, but I did find myself a little jumpy when certain things were happening, obviously the chasm fiend, but also then Adolin going into a duel. When he said he was going for a duel, I didn't actually realize that it was like a set-up duel. I just thought he was going to go fight someone. And then it's got all the shard plates out and the shard blades, and I was like, oh my God, Adolin's going to die. This is it. Like, I don't know. And I spent the whole time of that scene just waiting for Adolin to die, which obviously didn't happen. But yes, I'm definitely starting to look for spectacular things coming out of nowhere. I liked that we seem to have two references to the Way of Kings. So there's obviously the Way of Kings when they know what they're talking about, but then Teft is talking about some guy wrote this book that they based all these things off. And I was like, oh, we really need to get Kaladin and Dalinar together. This needs to happen. So I'm excited that we're finally getting to a point where that's actually feasible, that it could happen. But yeah, good chapters. Still loving it.
It is. Yeah, we're so close now. Like, I mean, like Joe and Dak both brought up that, you know, we're getting Dalinar's going to maybe have a bridge crew with him. Maybe this is our chance. So you're right. We're on the verge, which, of course, means that Brandon will pull the rug out and be like, and then they never meet at all. And that's the end of the book. That's the end of the series is, and Kaladin and Dalinar never met. The end. But no, there's, I agree with you. There's some fun little details in here, like you said, like that mention of the Way of Kings, that very oblique reference where Teft's like, yeah, some dude wrote some book, I don't know, or his wife, I think he says his wife wrote it, because, you know, men don't write.
Yeah, so. Men don't write. Yeah.
So there's all sorts of little stuff there for people who want to see it.
Yeah.
Okay, I guess let's do these chapters, y'all. We did The Journey first, chapter 58. And this one is a creepy one. I mean, not that the epigraphs aren't of people dying, people's dying words aren't mostly creepy, but I'm not even sure how to pronounce this one. It's Reshephir, the Midnight Mother, giving birth to abominations with her essence so dark, so terrible, so consuming. She is here. She watches me die.
That is creepy.
All right, my man, that's, thanks for that one. Maybe that has something to do with the symbol heads who are watching people.
Oh, that was referred to in this one, too.
Yeah, I was wondering if anyone was going to mention that. Yeah.
Yep, forgot immediately. Yeah, that was okay. Well, now we've got some other characters we need to get together.
Yeah, right. Like there's something. And these are far apart characters. Like, OK, there's something going on that's similar between the two of you. OK. Yeah. OK. Yeah. We'll
get there.
Maybe get into there. Yeah. More when we get there. And I like Adolin starting out the chapter with, like, I have a serious loathing of being wrong. And I'm like, I feel you, Adolin. Me too. And he's drinking yellow wine. He's allowed to indulge today because he's not on duty. But that doesn't mean that he doesn't have to wear his uniform, apparently. And I like this discussion about, like, doesn't everyone hate being wrong? And Adolin's like, well, I know some people who must love it, given how often they are wrong. I don't know why else they'd be wrong so often if they didn't love it.
Such a stuck-up thing to say.
Right. And then Danlin, his new girlfriend who likes Avromelons or whatever, she's hanging out drinking with him and his buddies. And she has a thing where she likes to match her wine to her outfits. Which
that just seems like a lot of effort.
I guess it's just whatever color outfit you pick that day, that's the only color wine you drink that day. So it's not that much effort, but it is a little bit quirky. Because they have, we haven't established, like, we've heard of several different colors of wine now, but we don't really know much about them. In this chapter, we know that there's a yellow and a violet, and I think we've heard of, like, blue and orange before.
I mean, there seems to be a nice spectrum.
Yeah. So, the wine rainbow.
The wine rainbow.
You call over your, what do they call the wine guy at the restaurant?
The sommelier?
Yeah, yeah. Call him over and you're like, so what color is good today?
We have this truthberry wine.
Ooh, fermenting truthberries now. That's
to die for.
The jam's better. And then another guy's just like, oh, wrongness is funny because it gives me people to make fun of. It's like, I'm perfect.
Like that guy.
And if everyone were like me, who would I make sport of? Good old Toral.
I don't like this guy.
Toral is apparently from High Prince Aladar's camp, but Adolin has acquaintances or friends in, like, all the war camps. Like, he knows people. And they talk about Sadeas, like, why didn't he move against my father? And people have got theories, like, oh, maybe. Nobody's theory is maybe Sadeas is just a good guy. Their theories are like, oh, maybe, like, he was wanting to get into a stronger position, or the timing wasn't right, or this or that.
No one believes Sadeas has friends.
No, and knowing Sadeas as much as we do, I'm not surprised, but
not that guy. That guy's got no friends. That's why he's sad, Eos.
I know why you're sad, yes.
Oh boy. What are we doing? What are we doing here, guys?
Oh, that's where you draw the line.
Oh, boy.
Too far.
We've gone a bridge.
A bridge four, too far.
Too far.
Oh wow.
Somebody stop us, please.
It's getting so punny in here.
Yeah.
Hey, we're all parents. We can all make those jokes.
It's true. Sure. It's an interesting exchange where Danlin's like, well, I know that I'm new and I don't know anything about what's going on. And Adolin's like, oh, you're always saying that you're ignorant. You're one of the most clever women that I know. And it says she hesitates, looking oddly annoyed for a moment. And then she's like, oh, you shouldn't say stuff like that when a woman is attempting humility. And he's like, all right, humility. I forgot that existed.
Yeah, that's a thing people are. I'm not that. Oh, yeah.
And she's just like, I mean, maybe Sadius just doesn't want to start a war. Maybe that's why he held himself back.
And everybody's like, no, that's not it.
No, that can't be it.
But then people start ragging on Dalinar. Toral's like, I mean, you know, the Blackthorn's reputation's not that impressive lately. And when Adolin gets upset, he's like, hey, don't be tiresome. You know, I didn't mean it as an insult. And Adolin has to point out, it's like, well, he's been winning lots of victories. He saved the king's life, like, from a giant monster. I don't know what more you people want from him. And they're like, well, you're the one who was complaining. You wanted him to change. And Adolin's like, you know what? I don't know that I do anymore. Like, I saw him save Sadius's life and be a super badass. And, you know, maybe he's a good, maybe he's okay. And he kind of tunes out for a little bit. And then he hears the woman being like, man, I wish he would step down. And Adolin's like, wait, what? What was that now? And they're like, oh, we were just seeing if you were paying attention. No, really, what were we talking about? And they're like, you don't think everyone is not aware of what happens to your father during high storms, right? People are saying he should abdicate because of it. And Adolin, who does not want to become High Prince, is like, no, that's dumb. And Danlin, at least, his girlfriend, is like, yo, you're right. Although I do wish you could talk him into easing some of these foolish restrictions our camp is under. He's like, oh my gosh, I've tried. You have no idea. But right now, Adolin has to go off to a duel. He's dueling Bright Lord Ressi, who's from High Prince Thanadol's camp. It's like, there have been some provocations from Thanadol, and this might serve to shut his mouth. So that's Adolin uses his dueling to make the other High Princes shut up. I guess that's a way to do it, maybe. He doesn't seem sure it will work, so maybe it's not a way to do it, but... And this is where
it's his way, darn it. It's his way.
He's walking through the outer market, which is the area outside of any individual camp where there's a marketplace. And so nobody's exactly in charge of it. So anybody can visit here. And that's why you meet up with your friends from other camps out here in the neutral territory. And this is where he comes to his realization as he's walking through the market that Joe mentioned, where it's just like, he realizes, like, it's like, why does my dad always make everybody be in uniform? And then he notices that, like, oh, because the guys who aren't in uniform, officers from other camps, you can't tell the difference between them and regular people. As opposed to, if something goes wrong, look, there's Dalinar's troops. You can find them easily.
Now that I've figured out my dad's not a complete crackpot, maybe he's onto something.
Maybe I should actually consider some of what he said. Who would have thought? Who would have thunk it? He's like, oh, but that doesn't matter because we're not going to be attacked. So, but what if it's not just about the Parshendi? And he notes that, like, as he walks down the street in his uniform, people can see his rank. Nobody, like, bumps into him or cusses at him or, like, tells him to get out of the way. They make way for him. And he's like, oh, no, this is good. He's like, maybe this isn't about protecting from the Parshendi. Maybe it's about not treating a war zone like a festival. Maybe it's about treating war with the gravity it deserves. Oh, and then we cut to Dalinar.
Can't believe it took my dad going crazy to figure that out.
Well, and I like at the end of that section where he's like, I think I understand now. And then the section ends with, disturbed, he hurried on his way. It's like, I'm deeply disturbed by this realization. But we cut to Dalinar, who is from memory reciting some passages from The Way of Kings, where... the king who wrote the book, like, walked from Abamabar to Urithiru. And Sadis is like, okay, where are those places? Like, I need context if you want me to be impressed by this. And Dalinar's like, yeah, I don't actually know. But given how the story is told, I assume that it must be a very long distance.
I just love how Sadeas gets so confused. I was like, but he's a king. Why wouldn't he ride a horse? I was like, well, the point is the journey. But wouldn't the journey be more comfortable by a horse? he just doesn't get it. And like, yeah. God, Dalinar is a more patient man than I.
I mean, he's not wrong. But the journey would be more comfortable on a horse.
Yeah.
But a horse.
You wouldn't learn anything on that journey.
Learn about riding a horse.
Like,
you should already know how to ride a horse.
That's true. Yeah, that's a fair point.
It really is just like Bandit trying to explain something to Bluey, and it's like, I'm trying to teach you a valuable life lesson. I don't want to learn a valuable lime lesson.
I want ice cream.
Yeah, Sadeas just wants ice cream, Dalinar.
He does.
Oh my god, that makes Elekar bingo.
Yeah, no, actually, I kind of see it. But we find out the guy who wrote the book, I don't remember if we'd heard his name before, Noadon is his holy name, but others call him Bajirdin, and they're like, we don't actually know if that was his real name or not. So some guy wrote a book. We have some names for him. Are they his real names? Who knows? And so, yeah, that's where Sadeas is just like, this is confusing. This guy's a king. Why is he doing this? And Dalinar's like, no, it is confusing, but let me explain. Okay. And he just recites more stuff about, like, this guy, he didn't take any money with him or any attendants. He just walked this long distance working for his supper. And I like the point that he's like, a beggar can do this, and people are telling me that I can't, so they're saying I'm less capable than a beggar. Meanwhile, Elekar is maybe listening, maybe not. He's watching the duels because he loves duels. This is one of the first things he did after arriving on the Shattered Plains was cart in sand for the dueling arena.
Priorities.
Yeah.
Wow.
Gotta have priorities straight. Mm. I made the trip, and as the astute reader has already concluded, survived it. Good quote. Another good way of King's quote. My family traveled via the direct method and had awaited me for weeks when I arrived. So the direct method is much faster than walking, we get. And that's where Sadeas is like, yeah, I mean, he could have at least ridden a horse. And the king's like, no, like, look what I learned from all this. I could have traveled quickly, but all men have the same destination. All save the heralds themselves must dine with the Night Watcher. And that's where he makes his point about the journey is what shapes us. The journey is what's important, not where we get to. And so no good can be achieved of false means. The ends don't justify the means, because it's the journey that matters, not the end. And then Sadeas and Dalinar go back and forth a little bit about the story. Sadeas is like, it's ridiculous. He also like throws a couple of insults at Dalinar that he's like, oh, no, come on. I meant it as a compliment. Kind of. Sort of.
So your story sucked. Is there one in this book with pirates in it?
Ninjas?
Better yet, pirate ninjas.
Dude.
And Sadeas, you know, he's like, yeah, he walked all that way just to prove that he could. Like, this is dumb. But Sadeas likes his comfort as he is then like, can we get an awning set up or something out here? Like, it's hot. Why do I gotta sit in the sun? And Elekar's like, I like the sun. I spend too much time locked away in those buildings.
This coming from Mr. like the outside world is trying to kill me.
Right, yeah.
I do like the note here. It's like we're having some wine, but it's the morning, so we're having yellow wine. I'm like, what?
Yeah, it, you know.
Yeah, like, what happens if you drink a red wine in the morning?
That's it, just
not socially acceptable.
Yeah.
Mimosas are morning wine.
All right, touche.
Yeah, there you go. And so he insults him a couple times, and he's like, you've always been emotional. It makes you genuine. It can also get in the way of level-headed thinking, but as long as it continues to prompt you to save my life, I think I'll live with it. I suppose by definition I would have to, wouldn't I? Which that's another clever little thing. Sadeas can be cool when he wants to be.
He's got some good lines.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's like, again, as much shit as we talk about Sadeas, and we'll continue to do so, he's no Straff.
Yeah. Right?
Or, who was the dickhead king in Elantra?
Oh, Iodon?
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, fuck that guy.
Sadeas is probably not sacrificing young women in weird rituals. I mean, maybe.
Can't rule it out.
Yeah. Can't be totally sure.
Yeah.
And I like Sadeas' conclusion is that Dalinar is a self-righteous prude, but he comes by it honestly. And then he's like, actually, I was just trying to annoy you that time. And Elekar's like, oh, maybe I should make you the new wit. And Sadeas is like, wait, what happened to the old one? Did somebody finally kill him? And Elkar's
Ding dong,
like,
the wit is dead.
He just vanished. He'll pop up again some other time.
I love Elkar's note about wit. He's like, unreliable as damnation. I'm like, what, the end of the world is unreliable?
Well, it's capitalized, now, though.
It is capitalized.
Yep. So, could be. Again, I think we mentioned, like, could be a shard, but I can't imagine, like, they mentioned Odium was the worst of the shards in Hoid's letter. And, like, would damnation, like, really be better than Odium?
I read it as, like, unreliable as hell, basically. But that may just be my read on it.
Yeah, no, that's fair. Maybe just because it capitalized it threw me a bit.
Yeah.
Is it the apocalypse today? No. They delayed it. Fuck.
Unreliable. the apocalypse hasn't happened yet, so clearly you can't rely on it.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah. So he looks at Navani, and he's like, oh, she's chatting with Adolin's latest infatuation, the auburn-haired scribe, who in that previous chapter, Adolin notes a lot of women with hair that aren't black, like, dye it, but she doesn't.
She's been around a little while now, hasn't she, Dan?
Yeah, a little bit. Maybe she'll last. Yeah. Maybe this is the one.
I probably should
stop calling her the latest infatuation.
I mean, you guys were theorizing when she showed up she was going to be a spy, so.
I still think so.
Yeah.
I still don't like her.
But also, like, here, it's like, oh, Navani's talking to her again. Like, Navani's, like, there's that whole thing about getting her the melons. It's like, what's Navani's interest in this girl? Is she spying for Navani? Making sure, Adolin's, like, being kept in line? Well, I think we assumed it was the Sadius plant, but it could be a Navani.
Interesting. You guys have been suspicious of Navani, like, since she showed up, too. Like, there's something more going on with her.
Yep.
One does not simply show up to a war.
And then Sadius is mad because High Prince Vama has shown up and he's wearing orange. Ugh. Brandon has an issue with orange. This is not the first time.
He really does. This isn't even the first planet.
Yeah, exactly.
It says, like, it's not even a burnt orange. And I'm like, does that make it better? If it's a burnt orange, like, it's still very garish from what you've described.
Sadius is like, red and orange, not even burnt orange, a blatant eye-breaking orange. I agree, I don't know that burnt is better, but...
Not in this context.
And he's like, oh, great, he's sitting right across from me, I'm going to have to stare at him this whole time. And I, like, Downer calls him out on judging people by how they look, and Sadius makes a point that's like, actually, you judge people by how they dress more than I do, because if they don't dress like the way that you think they should, then you, like, look down on them. And Downer has to be like, oh, geez, that's kind of true, isn't it? And they have a whole fashion discussion where he's like, oh, Downer, yeah, you were in the uniform. That never goes completely out of fashion because it's, like, useful. But...
The men having a fashion speech. Come on, be fashionable.
Real velour. Yes, exactly.
Have you ever felt real velour?
And so now it's time for Adolin's duel. That's what they're here to see. Adolin comes out and he's going to go up against a guy with his shard plate painted yellow, which also feels kind of garish to me, but whatever.
Yeah, but no one points it out, so clearly, Brandon's fine with it. That's what we've learned over the course of this podcast. The two things Brandon hates most in the world are horses and the color orange.
Yeah. Although in Elantris, it was like the queen was talking about how yellow. She hated yellow. So.
Yeah, that's true.
Just not this time. Nobody's around to hate yellow.
I feel like though having your shard plate as yellow could be quite useful on a battlefield. So. It doesn't seem as, like, out of place. Doesn't who's got – Sadius is green is his shard plate, I think.
I think red is his shard plate. Green is, like, his banner color. Okay.
Yeah. So it would make sense to be able to tell them apart.
Yeah, that's fair.
Yeah, versus having to wear sunnies around people that you're sitting with in the bar.
Interesting comparison. Okay. all right. So they're going to have a duel, and this duel is going to go until one of the plates on the armor is broken, which is apparently a common way to duel in between shard bearers. We find out that some duels can go to, like, multiple plates broken, but that can get dangerous. So, and we watch this fight and find out a little more about these stances we've heard about. Resi is using stone stance and Adolin is using wind stance, and basically, Adolin has more like a more nimble sort of free moving attack against this guy's like more powerful blows, which Dalinar says you don't need that much power with a shard blade because on a battlefield, the shard blade tends to just like go through people. It does help against other shard bearers, though. And in the end, Adolin wins, and the guy goes off kind of pissed off.
Yep, Adolin just beat up badass C-3PO.
Yep. And Elokar says that Adolin's good. He's better than my dad was, better than you, uncle. And Dalinar's like, yeah, this is what he loves. Not like war, not fighting, just the dueling. It's like his thing. But Adolin, because of the codes, his dad's insistence, he stick to the codes. He can't duel for rank. So that makes others underestimate him and agree to duels when they probably are not good enough. We also find out that there's a whole thing where, like, the king, it's a tradition the king lends his plate and blade to people who don't have it for an outrageous fee if they want to duel with it. And
I see how nobody likes that.
Yeah, right? Somebody else using your stuff.
How dare you bleed on the royal shard plate?
And then after the battle is over, or the match rather, they start having a talk about do you really want to abandon the war, Dalinar? And he's like, Dalinar gets a chance to make his whole explanation where he's like, what I would do, I do want to leave, but not because like I'm scared of battle. I think that we need to stabilize Alethkar. We need to secure it, make sure the high princes are loyal to this kingdom. And then we send people to figure out why the Parshendi killed Gavilar. I still wonder if maybe it was like the assassination was initiated by miscreants or rebels among their own people. We ask for repayment, maybe their own king for us to execute. And he has this whole like plan, basically, that is what he would do to do the stuff right. And Elokar's like, wow, that actually all makes sense. Why didn't you explain it before?
Because you had a hissy fit.
Yeah, right. And he's like, no, these are some good thoughts. And Satis is like, you wouldn't really, Your Majesty. And he says, this last attempt on my life has me unsettled. And this is Elokar's like, they're trying to kill me. They'll see me dead. And he says, I wonder sometimes if we aren't chasing after the 10 fools here. The assassin in white was a Shin. And Satis is like, well, the Parshendi took responsibility for sending him. He's like, well, yeah, but they're savages, easy to manipulate. Maybe it was a perfect distraction, pinning the blame on them, and we go off to war for years, not noticing the real villains. Which, I mean, actually, that's something that you guys have even brought up before. Like, maybe the Parshendi weren't really... Although Seth says in the opening that the Parshendi told him what to do. But it does seem weird. And we still don't know anything about the Parshendi's motivations, so...
Yeah, I think it's still possible. I was sort of toying with the idea during the week that maybe the Ghostbloods were behind it. They got the Parshendi to do it on their behalf. But then thinking about that, that doesn't really make sense because like why wouldn't the Ghostbloods just, you know, they've gone to all this trouble to track Seth down after the fact, find him and get him back into the murdering. If they had control of him to start with, why would they give it up?
Do we know that the Ghostbloods are who's got Seth murdering people, or is that just...
We suspect.
Okay. I didn't remember if there was some proof of that I was forgetting.
No, but I think we were all just saying, like, we're pretty sure it was them.
Okay. And so what Elokar's saying seems to make some sense, until he starts to go a little bit off the rails with, he's like, they watch me, always waiting. I see their faces in mirrors, symbols, twisted, inhuman.
That doesn't sound great. Sounds kind of like he's seeing some Shallan type stuff.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So what does that mean?
He's crazy.
Like, Shallan can't even like see them. She sees them in her drawings. And I guess Elokar says he's seeing them in mirrors. So this is really getting like some horror movie shit.
Like reverse vampires.
Yeah.
So I wonder if it's something that you like is... Maybe it's there for everyone, just people aren't attuned to it. Like, this is something that's developed in Shallan, because she wasn't always seeing that.
Mm-hmm.
So perhaps it's something in Elokar is developing as well. Or if he was artistic and allowed to draw, maybe Shallan's seeing it earlier. So maybe at some point you do actually end up seeing these things.
Oh, so maybe he's just further along than she is. That's an interesting idea.
I have nothing to base that off.
Well, and I guess we don't know for sure that, it might be that these things don't live in Yaakovet or whatever. So Shallan could have seen them, but didn't, because she never left her father's property until she came to Kar Bronth. So maybe They hang out there, and that's why she never saw them before.
Maybe.
Although we're a good ways from Carbaronth here, and they are hanging out here if what Elagar says is true. So
maybe you just can't be in your homeland.
They are both traveling, yeah. These are travel spren. I feel like more than just two people would be seeing them if that was the case. And I like at this point, Dalinar and Sadeas are like looking at each other, like, what the hell is he talking about?
Dalinar's going, you're worried about my vision?
it is interesting, like, that Dalinar is kind of like, I don't know if my visions are real or not. I need to explore it. What's that? Elikar's having visions as well? Oh, fuck it. Well, he's crazy. You think Dalinar of all people
clearly,
might be more open to it.
That's a good point. Yeah. Dalinar's just like, oh, his paranoia is getting worse. Yeah, maybe you shouldn't be throwing stones, Mr. Glasshouse, over here.
We all know Dalinar will reflect on it.
Yeah, he may think about it later. Yeah.
Yep.
Wait, was that a pun because of the mirrors?
It wasn't, but I'll take it.
It's so
happy accident.
We segue into a conversation about the like, oh yeah, these new tactics are going so well. And Sadie's like, yeah, but Dalinar's still using his stupid slow bridges. Sometimes like they kill tons of my guys before Dalinar even gets there. And between Sadeas and Elokar kind of needling him, like, come on, Dalinar, compromise. Use Sadeas's bridges one time. They even come up with this idea that it's like, look, you can still get there after him so that the archers won't shoot at the bridgemen you're using. So you won't be risking any extra lives but you can still get there faster. And he's like, well, but what if like the archers start firing on my bridgemen? What if you can't distract them well enough? And Sadeas is like, well, then we leave. We call it a failed experiment and move on. And so Dalinar, after a bunch of needling, is like, fine. Okay. I'll try it your way one time. We'll see how it works. And then as Dalinar's leaving, Sadeas is like, hey, you know what? Send me over a copy of that book and one of your clerks. Maybe I'll listen to some more of those stories. And Dalinar's smiling like, I'll do that, Sadeas. We're going to be friends again. Sweet.
Yay. I gave my friend a book recommendation. He's actually going to read it.
And then our second chapter is An Honor. And we get this one. Is not as dour as it is just kind of weird, I think. Is above the final void I hang, friends behind, friends before, the feast I must drink clings to their faces, and the words I must speak spark in my mind. The old oaths will be spoken anew. This one, spoken by a light-eyed child of 5 years. Diction improved remarkably when giving sample. Indeed. So what does that mean?
Why is the feast clinging to faces? That seems unsanitary.
It does. A feast he or she must drink. So how do you drink a feast? Is it like a smoothie?
But it's clinging to their face. Like, do you need to lick it off the faces?
Oh, this is getting gross. Okay.
This is a book podcast, right?
So we cut to Kaladin and Lopin and Teft hanging around inside the barracks in the dark with some spheres. And Kaladin is trying to figure out how to get the light out of the spheres. He's been apparently drawing stormlight and using it without being conscious of it. So now we're going to try to consciously do it. And apparently he's been doing this, I think he says, he spent a week staring at spheres, trying to get the light out, and it's not working. And Teft's like, I don't know, maybe you don't want it badly enough. I want it as badly as I know how. And Calum's like, maybe you're wrong about me. Maybe it's all a trick of the light. And he's like, sticking a bag to a barrel was a trick of the light. Okay, well, whatever. And Teft's theory is, like, you're like a baby, making his legs work for the first time. At first, it just kind of happens, and you slowly figure out how to do it on purpose. You just need more practice. And he's like, I've been doing this for a week. How much practice can it take? And Teft's answer is like, well, clearly more than you've had. Which, yeah, I guess that's true.
I like Teft.
Come on, use your brain.
He's sassy.
He is sassy. Sassy characters are the best. And Kaladin retorts was like, man, why am I even listening to you? You've already said you don't really know shit. And he's like, well, okay, I don't know how it works exactly, but I have an idea about how it's supposed to work. From the stories. And he's like, the story say that the Radiants could like fly and walk on walls and move great distances in a single heartbeat and make stone melt by looking at it, command sunlight. These are a lot of cool powers that these Radiants had, apparently. We got fucking Superman over here with like a million bajillion powers. And Kaladin's like, that doesn't even make any sense. If they could fly, why would they need to walk on walls? And Teth's like, I don't know.
I didn't mate them.
I mean, we've seen Seth walk on walls. So at the very least, we know that you can, that is a power some people can use.
We've seen some of the Radiants jump out of, like drop out of the sky, haven't we? From
that's true too.
Dalinar's vision. So maybe they just all get a different power.
I mean, we saw a bunch of them drop out of the sky. So obviously it's not like everybody get, but I guess, you know, if you've got five powers, then you're going to people and you have like 100 Radiants, then obviously more than one person gets each power. But yeah. Okay.
Yeah. But they didn't they have different divisions of the Radiants when they were coming? Cause they talked about there was like 10 groups and they only met two of them or something. So maybe each division had a certain ability.
Yeah. So each order, there are 10 orders, and we know one of them that was talked about was the Windrunners, and we saw guys drop out of the sky and decided maybe that was the Windrunners, so maybe they're the ones that can fly. Hmm. Although we've now established, I think, earlier that Syl was like, Kaladin, don't you want to do this stuff like the Windrunners did? So, I don't know, because he doesn't seem to have flying powers. He does have powers to stick stuff to other stuff. True. He has glue powers. He's from the glue order of Radiants.
Slashing powers. I mean, it's well established.
That's true. We saw it with Seth.
Yeah.
Seth explained it all in like the first chapter we read, or the prologue actually.
We'll have to go back and read it.
Yeah. Kaladin is the one who needs to go back and read that. Like, just come on. How come you don't know how this stuff works?
We'll just jump into the text and go, here you go, Kaladin. This might explain a few things for you. Okay.
Man, this book got meta.
Right? And Teth says, you're not a Radiant yet. You can infuse, but it's being a Radiant is more than that. It was a way of life. The immortal words. Life before death, strength before weakness, journey before destination. It was their motto and the first ideal of the immortal words. There were four others. And Colin's like, oh, what were they? He's like, I don't actually know. Each order had their own, like, four ideals, but the first one was the same for each of them. Or supposedly. And like Calvin's like, well, yeah, life comes before death. No shit. Like, how is this a revelation?
It's like your great religious book. Yeah, we live before we die. Doy.
And the Teft has to be like, no, it's like, it's about protecting life, not killing unnecessarily. Living is harder than dying. A Radiant's duty is to live. And journey before destination, which, hey, we were just hearing about journey before destination in that book, that how the journey was more important than the destination. Who knew? And Callan's like, do you really believe anybody's going to follow those kind of vows, especially a bunch of light eyes? Men always pretend things like virtue or divine guidance or a mandate to protect the rest of us. Is this where he talks about the king writing it? Because I was like, I feel like it should be, but I'm not seeing it. So maybe not. Maybe that comes later. Oh, yeah, there it is. I just missed it. It's all out of some old book that his mother read, Teft's mother read. There was some old king who came up with it, had his wife write it in a book or something. My mother read it. So there you go. And this is when something happens. It's like, oh, hey, somebody's coming, Kaladin. So they have to stop practicing and go outside and meet Kashal's palanquin, which it says her tall, oft silent husband walked alongside. I don't know if we ever heard him say anything.
Nope.
Also, Gaz has not reappeared, it says. So, wonder what's up with that.
I do wonder where he is, but not in any concern for his welfare.
You're like, I'm curious, but I don't actually care about him.
Yeah. It's like, it would be nice to have an answer, but I'm not worried for his safety.
Poor Gaz. What did he ever do to be a huge asshole? Really, he just managed to get intimidated by Kaladin a whole lot. So,
yeah,
he was better off wherever he is.
He was just a pretty pathetic dude who got into some gambling debt and used that as an excuse to punch down on people like less fortunate than him. Kind of an ass.
Mm, yeah, fucking Gary, man.
Yep, fucking Gary.
And so they show up, and Bright Brightness, sorry, no, I almost said Bright Lord. She's a woman. Brightness Hashal is like, you have such a well-trained band bridge leader, so efficient at bridge runs. My husband has made a decision. Your men are so good at bridge runs. You are a model to the other crews, so you will be on bridge duty every day. And I like, he actually asks her about Gaz. Like, Gaz hasn't been seen for some days. Is he well? And she says, no. And no. That's all. He is not well.
Well, Gaz is dead.
Maybe. We haven't had a chapter called Gaz, so, you know, I don't know.
Or Gaz is dead.
I had to go back and make sure that we didn't have a chapter called Gaz. I don't remember. No.
So much for the card you read from.
Yeah, right. And so anytime there's a bridge run, they're going to be going on the bridge run. She's like, yeah, your team is just too good. We have to use it. And you get to sleep during the day, just on call in case there's a bridge run. You'll wake up and run the bridge. And then at night you go down into the chasms and work, because we have to send torches down with you anyway. So why not? Doesn't matter if it's day or night down there. And he's just like, he has nothing that he can say to this. She tells him to consider it an honor, and that's it. He had to stop himself from saying what he thought of her honor. So basically, they're going to double the number of bridge runs they go on, double the rate at which they're dying off. And like, Lopin says, it's not fair. And Callan's like, yeah, we're bridgemen. When did you think fair applied? And Lopin's like, what do we do, Gancho? He says, we go to the chasms like we're scheduled to, and we get some extra sleep tonight because we're going to need it. And they need another few weeks of training before the men will be ready. But we don't have a few weeks, because with Sadeus and Colin working together, runs happen nearly every day now. And one bad run could wipe us out.
Does Sadeus have a last name?
That's an interesting point. I mean, I would guess Sadeus is his last name, because we know Colin is Dalinar's last name.
Yeah, but like, even when like Dalinar, his, you know, former BFF, is talking to him, he calls him Sadeus too.
It's true.
Is Sadeus like Cher or Zendaya?
Yeah. Absolutely. Such fashion sense.
Yes, he's very fashionable.
He's very modern. Yeah. Was it the modern Major General? The...
Okay, yeah, Sadeus is Cher. Or Beyonce. Sadeus is Beyonce, clearly.
Oh, yeah. Yep.
Bliss.
And so Kaladin has gotten so upset in this discussion that he's luminescent again. He's still holding that sphere from earlier, and he's sucked in the light somehow. And Syl shows up when they're like, how did I do it? What happened? Syl pops in. She's like, you breathed it in. I saw it. You were mad. You drew a breath and the light came too. And Teft is like, what are we going to do? We're all going to die. And Callan says, I'm going to do something about it today. And tell Syl to go find some Parshendi corpses. Which is a little bit ominous, but it just gets weird as it continues through this chapter. He has Teft take over, and he's going to go look at these bodies. And Teft's like, oh, you want an escort? Because of, you know, chasm fiends? And Callan's like, the Light Eyes kill all the chasm fiends who come this close to our side. Besides, if I did run into one, like, what difference would some extra men make? Which is, that's the better point between those two points, I think. And so they find some dead bodies, a lot of dead bodies. And he starts to feel bad about his plan to take Bridge 4 and leave, because he's leaving all of the other bridgemen behind. And he's like, look, I can only be responsible for so much. I have to save Bridge 4. I can't save everybody. And the voice in his head is like, well, I mean, if you leave, who will fight for them? Nobody cares for them. And then he does the thing with the light. He somehow manages to take a breath and seemingly intentionally breathe in the light. And once he's holding the stormlight, he doesn't need to breathe, which is useful. And so he's like all juiced up on stormlight, and he runs and jumps, putting his feet up on the wall because he's going to try to run on the wall. And he bounces off and falls to the ground.
Yeah, you got to start somewhere.
It's that classic scene from many superhero origin stories where they try to use their power and it fails hopelessly.
Yep, exactly.
Up and away, Web.
Some reason I'm thinking of the montage from Shazam where he's trying to figure out how to fly.
Oh, yeah.
And I like Syl's like, what was that? And he goes, me being an idiot. And she's like, I don't think you're ready for that yet. Don't be so risky. If you die, I go stupid again, you know? And he's like, oh, okay, I'll keep that in mind. Maybe I'll remove dying from my to-do list for the week.
I don't know about your previous captains, but I intend to do as little dying as possible. Signed to paper.
Signed to paper. Exactly. Yeah. And he finds some Parshendi corpses. And so, I like Syl's like, this is morbid, Kaladin. As if she hasn't been helping him find corpses this whole time while they're looking for stuff to salvage. But it does get more morbid, so, you know.
Like they're not simply looking for corpses this time.
Yeah. Rumors in camp claim the Parshendi took the wounded humans away and ate them. But rumors also said they left their dead not caring for the fallen, and we know that's not true.
Definitely not.
But Kaladin finds, actually, a really nice, beautifully ornamented knife on one of the Parshendi bodies. It's lined with glyphs that he didn't recognize. And he starts trying to cut some of that armor off of the corpse. And he's like, this is really different from human physiology. Like, this armor is, like, attached to them with ligaments and stuff. But there wasn't a whole lot of blood because it's already pooled in the dead body. And so, basically, he just cuts away the body armor and the head armor plate that the Parshendi has. And Lopin comes up in the middle of this while he's, like, sawing at the skull. And he's like, man, you don't like them at all, do you? And Lopin has brought him an armored leather vest and cap, like spearmen use, and a medium-sized wooden spearman's shield. Finally came a series of deep red Parshendi bones and some rope. And Lopin's like, you haven't lost your wits, have you? Because if you have, I have a cousin who makes a drink for people who've lost their wits, and it might make you better, sure. And instead of disagreeing, Kaladin's like, well, I mean, if I'd lost my wits, would I say that I had? And Lopin's like, I don't know. Guess it doesn't matter if you're crazy or not, because if you're crazy, you're the good type. I like you. Not the killing people in their sleep type.
This guy's pretty good.
I love Lopin, or the Lopin, because he's the only one. And so he puts the breastplate. He brought the breastplate over to the leather vest and tied it onto the front with some leather straps. And then he does the same with the cap and the helm. So he's like making a set of armor out of the Parshendi armor. Like he's gonna try to sneak into camp wearing Parshendi armor. I don't. And then he uses the straps to tie the bones together and attach them to the front of the shield. Which, yeah, this is getting real, real messed up. And then he tells Syl to lead us to the short chasm. They'd figured out the best spot to, like, stick stuff to the bottom of a bridge. Where it was the most shallow chasm and right near Sadeus's war camp. And this is where Lopin suddenly, like, cuts off and is breathing all or he grows pale and he freezes in place. And Colin's like, wait, what? And then he hears the scraping.
There's terrifying.
There's a grinding the sound. The scuttle. Woop, 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 woop. Yeah, no, not like that. Here's a grinding sound and looks, and there's something enormous moving in the chasm. And but it's moving away. So that's good.
Don't move. You can't see us if we don't move.
I like, if you've ever read The Lost World, the second Jurassic Park book by Michael Crichton, yes. they make fun of that hard, where they're like, oh yeah, some idiot had this theory about how T-Rex couldn't see you if you didn't move, but it's really the stupidest theory ever. Why anyone would believe that?
Yeah, but that was Levain who was really shitting on it, and Levain was an asshole.
Yes, he was just completely full of himself and thought he was better than everybody, so it does make sense for the character.
It's like, I don't like this theory, therefore it is the stupidest fucking thing.
Yeah, he thought that pretty much everyone was dumber and beneath him. But.
Yep.
Anyway, I just reread that not long ago, actually. I love that book.
Yeah, me too.
But, okay, sorry, I lost my spot. I like, after it's gone, Lopin's like, I guess the nearby ones aren't all dead, huh, Goncho? And Colin's like, yeah, I guess not.
No shit.
And Syl shows up, she's like, hey, what's happening? Chasm Fiend, really? We should chase it. Yeah, you could fight it, I bet. She's just messing with him, it's fine. And so they get over to the bridge. And he was going to have Rock shoot an arrow with the rope up there. But every time you shoot an arrow, there's a risk that if it misses, somebody's going to notice this arrow flying up out of the chasm. So he gets an idea. And he says, we need rocks, fist-sized rocks, a bunch of them. And he whispers those words, the immortal words, as Teft calls them, the first ideal of the Knights Radiant. And he breathes in and gets that stormlight going. And he says that he feels like a storm in me, or he thinks that. He doesn't talk because he's holding his breath while he's got all the stormlight in there. And then he goes, this better work, to himself. And he starts sticking the rocks to the wall to make like a ladder that he can climb up and get out. Or not out, but up to the bottom of the bridge. And he does kind of a whole thing with like the rope, like, and the bag of like weird armor that he's made, and he like gets it up tied up there. And then he's kind of hanging from the rope, and he's like, okay, what do I do now? And Syl's like, you should cut it. He's like, what? While I'm dangling here? And he's like, you'll be fine. He says, that's a 40-foot drop. And he goes, no, I feel right about this, Kaladin. You'll be fine. Trust me. You insulted me the other week. I think you should apologize. By cutting a rope and dropping 40 feet. No, by trusting me. Which, okay, that's fair. And he does it. And he does like an Iron Man landing and like throws up like chips of stone when he hits the ground, but he's all right. And Lopin is like super impressed. Like, that was incredible. And Syl's just like, I told you so. And so Kaladin says that he wants Lopin to get that armor on the next bridge run and then give it to him right before the final assault. And Lopin's like, I don't think they're going to like you running a bridge in armor, Gancho. This is not going to be any different from what you tried before. And Kaladin says, we'll see. Just do it. And that's the end of our chapters. So let's move into predicaments. I will give you guys, we're going to read three chapters for next time. So I'll give you guys some more chapter names and see what you think. 60 is called That Which We Cannot Have. 61 is called Right for Wrong. And 62 is called Three Glyphs. For whatever that is worth. There you go.
That Which We Cannot Have. What was the second one?
The second one is Right for Wrong.
Okay. And the third one?
And the third one was Three Glyphs.
Okay. So That Which We Cannot Have. I'm going to guess that's good old Gavilar's sister-in-law. We can't have that. She's not haveable by him.
Fair.
And can't, it's going to be either that or I'm going to keep on guessing that this is going to be her perspective. And she's like, yep, I can't have Gavilar. Right
or
from
Dalinar,
wrong.
You mean? I mean, Gavilar's dead. Can't have him.
She definitely can't have Gavilar.
Yeah, he's dead. But yeah, the Dalinar, yeah. I can't have Dalinar. And then the next right from wrong, Dalinar's like, I don't know right from wrong. Should I pursue this woman? I can't do that. It's my brother's wife. And that's what that chapter's about. And then glyphs is Kaladin, because he's always talking about how he can read glyphs, the frickin' braggart. those are just silly predictions, because I don't know what else to say. So that's what I'll say. Where do I think we're going, man? Well, I think I've kind of talked about it a little bit. I think Adolin's going to come around to his dad's way of thinking, like, okay, I should just do what my dad says. He's actually a pretty smart guy. So there's going to be less pushback from Adolin. Dalinar and Sidaeus seem to be getting along, which could only mean that something's going to go horribly wrong. So Sidaeus, I'm still like waiting for a Sidaeus axe to fall. So I'm going to keep waiting on that. And then also we've got Dalinar and his sister-in-law. I think it's going to get, there's going to be a lot of sexual tension and it's going to continue to be tense and it's not going to be good for anybody. And El Hokar is going to be like, you're going to bang my mom. That's messed up. You're out of here. Yeah. That sounds good. And what else? I mean, I'm building a real soap opera here, if you can't tell.
Yeah, you are.
And then we're going to have Kaladin, and he's finally going to meet he's not going to meet Dalinar face-to-face because, you know, Dalinar's the High Prince, but he's going to have to run bridges for him, and he's like, oh, these guys aren't so bad. And he's going to figure out a way to be like, hey, can we just be like your permanent bridgeman? And then everybody will be happy.
Except for all those other bridgemen.
Right, exactly. But that'll be that.
Those guys are jerks anyway. We don't like them.
Yeah, they're the worst.
Kaladin tried to starting to save them, and they're like, you know how the other bridge crews treat us. But yeah, okay, I feel like it's almost low-hanging fruit at this point, since we spent the whole beginning of the episode talking about how, like, maybe this is where finally Kaladin and Dalinar meet. But yeah, that's it is a completely logical conclusion to draw. I do like this thing where you're like, Sadeas and Dalinar, I'm waiting for the axe to fall. They can't end up being friends at this point. Yeah. So,
no friendships, no.
What kind of axe could that be then, if there's an axe to fall?
Sadeas is like, Elokar, he's trying to bang your mom. Get him!
Freaking narc. Okay.
He's chilling. He just says to the king, get him. And the king's like, ah!
I'll get him.
Get him? That was your idea. Get him.
Okay. Classic. Brennan ain't it, Nanny.
Watch the new one.
Yeah, I, you know, got an 18-month-old. Kind of hard to get to the movies these days.
Yeah, it is. Hey, if you ever want to go out, we can watch them for a while.
Yeah.
We live right near you.
It's true. That is a thing.
Honestly, I'm trying to gather my thoughts. I don't really have much for predictions. Like, those chapter names don't really give me too much.
Yeah.
Yeah, I have no idea what Kaladin is going to do with this, like this armor on a bridge run. Like, I do feel like this, like, we're finally going to get that bridge run where he meets Dalinar. But I've spent last week talking about how I think that'll all go down, or the week before. But honestly, I've got nothing this week. I'm just like, all right, let's just let this play out. It wasn't a lot of events this week,
right?
So it didn't really give me much new to work with. I agree with Joe. There is definitely a Sadeas axe that's going to fall. Maybe he's going to read the book and just like, this is bullshit. I don't care. And Dalinar's like, friendship ended.
How dare you not like the book I recommended you?
Yeah. But yeah, like I'm really not sure where it's going to go.
Okay. I feel like that's a good place to be 84% of the way through the book. You're still like, oh man, what's going to happen?
How many chapters are there?
There are a total of 75 chapters and an epilogue.
Okay. We're up to, we're doing 62 next week. Okay.
So we're getting there.
Yeah. So there's, so we've just still got a dozen chapters even after next week's episode.
Yep.
There's still room.
We got five episodes after this one. Always room for Sandra Lynch.
Mm. Yep.
Five episodes after this one, so they'll start getting a little bit bigger.
It was a real shock to everybody that Sandra Lynch happened in the epilogue.
The whole thing.
Okay. So, what do I think is about to go down? I think that which we cannot have is going to be a conversation between Dalinar and Adolin.
Oh.
I feel like Adolin, like, he's been thinking about these things with Dalinar, like with the Way of Kings and, or not necessarily the Way of Kings, but this is why we wear the uniform and all that sort of stuff. Maybe we can't have these things because of the situation that we're in or because of the codes or something like that. I feel like they're going to have a conversation together, which is going to be that heart-to-heart before something bad happens to one of them. You know, it's like the last conversation they have that they don't realize is the last conversation they're going to have.
Mm.
If we're predicting that one of them might die, this could be getting close to that time. So I think that's where I'm going to go with that. Right for wrong, I think, is going to be Kaladin's chapter. It almost sounds a bit like, you know, journey before destination, life before death. Like, I know it's not that exact phrasing, but I want to say he's going to do something like crazy. And I'm thinking he's going to pull out that Parshendi armor exactly when the army doesn't want him to. He's going to enrage the Parshendi, which is going to just cause some problems, make them angry because someone's handled their dead, right? Mm. He knows it's going to make them cranky. So I think Kaladin's going to do something like that then, which I think is then going to attract. So in the third chapter, Three Glyphs, I think, is going to be Dalinar's perspective again, seeing whatever's going to happen in that. Like, as a result of that, refresh my memory. Were there some glyphs or something on the blade that Kaladin pulled out, or
Yes, he said that there were glyphs he didn't recognize. Yeah.
Yeah. So I'm wondering if there's three glyphs there he doesn't recognize, but maybe Dalinar does, which he's really interested in what's going on with the Parshendi to learn more about them. And maybe there's something that he's seen before, maybe in one of his visions or something, which is going to be the catalyst for then he needs to talk to Kaladin, because where does he have this stuff from? I think we've got to move in that storyline of figuring out what's going on with Dalinar. Obviously, we've got the story of what's happening with Kaladin. They need to talk to each other. And I think just simply being a bridgeman is not going to be enough, because Dalinar is not going to be looking for a bridgeman to talk to. And Kaladin doesn't want to talk to a Light Eyes. So especially when they're trying to get things off the bottom of bridges and stuff like that, I think it's going to have to be Dalinar is going to notice something Kaladin does, or Kaladin's done then something really bold, like put Parshendi bones on the front of the bridge or something, like, which would really upset everyone else. Mm. So I think that's where we're going. That's my prediction for where we're about to go. Bold. I'm going to go with my volcano level theory. Hoid is Noadon.
Ooh. Okay.
Don't have a lot of evidence. It was just a gut feel. I think it was all the talk about being a beggar. I was like, Hoid is,
Hoid is
a bit of a chameleon, right? He can blend in. He learns things. He learns the ways things are done and can get into anything that he needs to get into. He's been around a long time. I was trying to think about what we thought Hoid was with in relation to like all the shards and Adenalcium and all that sort of stuff. And I just, I can't find somewhere that I think I'm really happy that he sits. But this is something that he could reasonably be, I guess. And he's obviously invested in a lot of what's happening with the shards and all that sort of stuff. But, you know, being, I think there was a reference as well about stopping to sing a song or play some music or something like that too. And I was like, you just saw him do that. But he's quite heavily invested on being here. Yeah, he turns up everywhere else, but it's all part of the bigger picture. Whereas I feel like he's got a tie to this planet. Hmm. So that's my volcano theory going to sit in the background thing. And we'll see what happens over the next couple of books. Because I'm sure we're not going to find that out soon, if ever. Probably ever, but, like, it will probably be a long time away.
Okay. Well, this is an interesting theory. I mean, he's been around a long time, and maybe he's been around here a long time for all we know. So, yeah, that could fit.
It's a cool theory, yeah. I like that. And there's also, isn't there, like, a podcast called Finding Noadon?
Following Noadon.
Following Noadon. So that kind of, if they're doing the same kind of thing we are doing, the Cosmere stuff, they could be following Hoid through the Cosmere.
Uh-huh.
Cool. Cool idea. I like that, Jamie.
Hmm.
I also like what you said, because I think that in all the theories about how Dalinar and Kaladin are going to meet, we haven't talked about much the fact that Kaladin's not likely to walk up and want to have a conversation with Dalinar.
Yeah, I've heard really good things about you. Yeah, you seem like a top bloke and someone I'd really like to know. Like, that's not going to happen.
No. So, yeah, it's like Dalinar would have to initiate this conversation in some way.
Yep.
But Kaladin's always doing impressive things. So maybe it's not that hard a buy. I don't know.
He does tend to, like, when people who outrank him come a-calling, he doesn't initially go out of his way to antagonize them. So, like, if Dalinar came up and spoke to him, it's like a, hello, High Prince, I'm not going to piss you off straight away.
Yeah, not until you say something that I'm going to retaliate to.
I don't think he'd go straight into, oh, hey, I'm gonna battle you. Like, I don't think that would work. I think he'd hear him out, and I think Dalinar, as he comes to Kaladin, would have to say something that would be like, hang on, I actually need to have a conversation with you. Something's got to pique Kaladin's interest to go, we need to swap some information.
That makes sense. Okay.
He'll come up and be like, where did you get that blade? Where did you get Parshendi bones? Like, there'll be something. I mean, I feel like Kaladin probably wouldn't want to answer that question either, but.
Yeah.
There'll be something that will trigger the need for a conversation.
That's fair. something would have to happen. You're right. It's not, if they just happen to be in the same place at the same time, Caladan's not going to be like, so, hey, how's, what's it like being High Prince? Fun?
Just imagining like Rock or someone just saying, it's like, hey, Caladan, like Bright Lord Dalinar wants to talk to you. Fine. But if he says one thing I don't like, I'm leaving. Hello, Bridgman. I'm leaving.
Like, hey, my son says that you owe him some money. I don't know what that's about.
Oh, please. Adlin can't keep the girls he's dating straight. He's not going to remember a random Bridgman he paid.
It's probably true, yeah, honestly. Okay, well, good theories. Nice. Some nice ideas going around today. But I agree with Dax's kind of perspective also that it's a little hard to come up with new stuff based on what we saw today. There wasn't so much to work with.
You said that, but right on the back of like people of the other two coming up with some pretty cool new stuff.
That's true. You're not wrong. But I mean, really, it's I think the one thing that that we were working with was like, hey, here's an opportunity for Dalinar and Caladan to meet, which is something that we've been theorizing since like we found out both of these characters were on the Shattered Plains.
Yeah.
Okay, let's move into, we actually have several emails and two new patrons today. So Joe, bring up your patron thing list while I'll do some emails first.
It's called a fairing list, guy who runs the Cosmere podcast.
You know, I don't want to get technical, you know. Okay, the first one is from Becca, and Becca, her email is titled Dragonsteel Prime. Hi, everyone. Longtime listener here. I continue to love listening to your podcast and the amazing predictions about what will happen next in the Way of Kings. I've fallen a bit behind because of the whirlwind that is life, but hope to catch up quickly. I just finished listening to the episode where you shared your top five Cosmere characters, and it got me thinking about my own. I won't share them because many of them are from Stormlight, and I don't want to give any spoilers by accident.
Yeah.
While thinking through my own top five list, I found a pattern in the character type that I really love, which leads me to a question. Is there a type of character that you tend to enjoy most or find the most engaging, either within the Cosmere or just in general? I love characters that are often overlooked, underestimated, or unexpectedly gain skill or importance. I love an underdog story or a character that has an off-the-wall sense of humor.
This might be kind of lame, but I'm like a protagonist guy. Like, my main protagonist has got to be the coolest, most interesting character. That may make me pretty cliche or whatever, but that's what I likes.
Basic Joe over here, you know.
Yeah.
I like crotchety old bastards with a heart of gold. Nice. The clubs, or Mad-Eye Moody, or Stannis Baratheon.
Yeah, you really do, don't you? Yeah.
She's like, wait a second, I've never thought this about you.
This is an authentic answer. Not saying that anything else wasn't, but yeah, actually, you do have a type.
Yep.
Oh, I don't know. I think I'm a bit of a plain Jane too. The underdog. I love someone having to overcome something and be better for it in the long run.
Yeah, that makes sense. You got that character growth.
Yeah, I do love a really great villain though, like a strong villain, strong motives. Yeah, well written villains are also pretty good. Like, you love to hate them.
I can agree with that. Do we love to hate Straff? Is that
no, we just hate Straff.
Hated him. Yeah,
that's fair.
I mean, also really well written, but I think also reprehensible.
Reprehensible. So bad.
Yeah,
yeah.
We don't want him around.
To hate.
Yeah. Okay, that's fair. If I'm answering that, I like scholarly characters. Like, I feel like Shallan's attitude of like, man, I just really like studying and like learning things and being a scholar. Like, her and Yasna are some of my favorites in this book for that reason. Which it's kind of weird because Elend was never my favorite, and he's also kind of that way, but he annoyed me. Not that I dislike him. He annoys me in the first book probably especially, but he does kind of grow on you. But he was never like my favorite. Which is, like I said,
I don't think he was anyone's favorite from the bat. Like, everyone was a bit like, oh, this guy. And then by the end of book three, we're like, okay, Elend, you're all right. We'll keep you.
When we read the end of the first book, Yeah, when we read the end of the first book and they made him king, we're all like, what? King.
Oh.
That guy?
That was also like, oh, like he made this amazing speech and they instantly decided to make him their king. And we didn't even get to hear the speech.
Yeah. It must have been some speech. He's like, you don't understand, guys. This kingdom's going to have blackjack and hookers.
I also like sarcastic characters, I feel like. But anyway, Vegas says.
I also like, you know, like the characters who are honest about their, like, you know, they're just like, look, that's what I am. I know that I'm not better. I can try to be, but, you know, good to go back to Song of Ice and Fire. Like, my favorite two characters are Davos Seaworth and the Hound. Like, very different parts of the spectrum, but they're both just like, I know what I am. And I know, like, I'm not great, but I'll, you know, at least I'm honest about it. And like, yep, fair.
Interesting. Okay. I can think of some characters like that who are pretty fun. Yeah.
Yeah.
For some reason, Badger from Firefly pops into my head. But anyway, I don't know that he actually does know what he is. He kind of thinks highly of himself. But anyway.
Never saw enough of him.
She signs off like, keep up the amazing work, life before death, Becca. And then she sent a follow-up email. Hi again. Forgot to ask my second question, which is actually the title of the email was Dragonsteel Prime, and that email did not address it at all. So here we come to the second part. It's like, just found out that Brandon has released Dragonsteel Prime for free, so anyone who wants to can download it and read it. It's not canon, but may give fun insight or connection to the Cosmere. Do you think you'll add it to the reading lineup someday, or is it there just too much other Cosmere literature to get through? So I don't know that I will add the Sanderson curiosities to the list of like stuff we would read, particularly not Cosmere. I mean, maybe like after we did the non-Cosmere stuff, but this, the like Way of Kings Prime and Dragonsteel Prime, I'm just like, I don't know about Dragonsteel because I haven't read it yet, but there's just the potential there to spoil things because these are stories that he wrote and then took at least pieces of to move into the future. Like Way of Kings Prime is a very different story from the Way of Kings, but there's so many pieces in there that are relevant to what does happen in the Stormlight Archive that I'm like, if we did read it, it would have to be way down the line. And so I don't know yet is the answer on that. I talked about previously, maybe that could be a thing that I'd let like, you know, Dak or Joe or somebody read and record themselves for the Patreon like I do with the stuff for the Patreon. Maybe that's a direction we could go with it. I'm just, like I said, worried about potential spoilers. So I don't know is the answer, Becca. We shall have to see. At the very least, I need to read Dragonsteel Prime first and then move from there. So thank you, Becca. That was a fun email. The next one is from Adam, and it says, Moash is great. What is Dak talking about? That's the title. And the email says, I don't know why Dak hates Moash so much. I mean, all he's done so far is be kind of mean to Kaladin before he understood how much Kaladin really cared about helping Bridge 4. In fact, now he's totally on Cal's side and ready to be like his right-hand man or something. In terms of his hatred for Light Eyes, I'd be pretty upset with the ruling class too if they treated me like shit and forced me to run suicide missions just so they could get a little bit richer. And sure, killing them all might be a little extreme, but it's not like Moash is actually in a position to do it or anything.
I don't know what to tell you, man. I just, like, I think I've said it before. It's like, I can't quite put my finger on it, but something about the guy is just making my skin crawl.
Yeah, so how'd you get that? He's not a crushy. He's a crushing young man.
Yeah. It doesn't count. No. But, no, like, honestly, it's like, just something about the guy doesn't sit right. And it seems to be making waves with some of our listeners, and it's making Data laugh a lot. So I'm just like, all right, well, it's good for comedy, so let's just keep going with it.
Yeah, same thing with Spook. It's you got to intensify it just so it keeps being funny.
Yeah. Also,
but we're all pretty clear that Spook is the worst, right? Like, I mean, yeah, I don't even understand how that's up for debate among listeners. Like, he's awful.
I remember at the start of Well of Ascension where like Spook showed up and you're just like, oh, he learned to talk. Maybe he thinks that'll make me like him. Wrong.
I like the implication that if all we have to do is wait for Moash to get older and then Dak will like him because he'll be a crotchety old man.
Nope. Not going to happen.
Oh, thank you for Adam, leader of the Moash fan club, for your email.
Is it a big fan club? I actually have no idea.
Yeah, me either.
Like, are we gonna get like weeks upon weeks of hate mail because I hate Moash like we did for Wayne?
Could be. The next email is from Corinthian. It says, "Sad that I'm caught up. Morning crew, I've been listening to your podcast for a while and have been enjoying hearing Dak, Joe, and this must be a typo, Jamie." It says gamey.
It's not the worst thing I've been called.
"Going through for the first time, and it brings back great memories of myself going through these books. Stormlight Archive is the series that I've been excited for you to get into, and I will work on rereading these prior to the new book being out in November. Thanks again from Corinthian." I'm glad you're enjoying it. Thank you. We got two more emails, but I think we'll save those because we got two patrons and then we'll wrap up. Our first new patron at the ska level is Helen.
Helen, the ska level. Let me see. Helen, for you, my friend, you can be an archivist like our good friend Sazed. Well, nice. He was everything, but you know,
yeah.
That's the thing that, he did the best.
That was his jam.
Yeah, he jammed on archiving.
Nice, thank
not
you.
Not to be confused with jam.
Yeah, not to be confused with being addicted to jam like Captain.
Right. Yeah. Let's be very clear. No one was addicted to jam.
We are that we know of.
That we know of in that series.
We don't actually know Say's like stance on jam. He could be fan.
True. He could be a stalwart jammer.
A jammer. And our second new patron is at the misting level, Leniathan. I pronounce it that way because it looks like Leviathan, but with an N in place of the V. So
okay, Leniathan. Well, Lenny. I feel like Leniathan, because you remind me of Leviathan, you have to be a Gasper.
The Leviathan summon from Final Fantasy. Nice. Okay,
yeah.
I like it. All right, thank you, new patrons. If you guys want to check out our Patreon, I am, by the time this episode goes up, I will, the final episode in my reading of Defiant will have, because I just today finished editing that and put it up to go up Tuesday, so this will it'll be almost a week later when this episode comes out, and hopefully I will have started something new. I haven't actually started recording anything new yet. Don't know for sure what I will read next. I thought maybe Long Chills and Case Doe, but now we've got Dragonsteel Prime out, and I kind of want to read that. So we'll see. Maybe the first episode of whatever it is will be out by the time you hear this, and you'll know before me what I'm reading. But so if you want to check out my first reactions to various Brandon books, that's and the Possum Hunter special episode that we did, that's also on the Patreon. Check out our Patreon. You can find it on the Sander Lanch podcast or patreon.com/thesanderlanch. Check it out. If you'd like to send us an email like these folks did, the address is thesanderlanch@gmail.com. You can find us on Instagram and X and Facebook and various online places. We are, as I said, we're reading three chapters for the next one, 60, 61, and 62. And then I think there's only one more episode where we will read two chapters. Let's see. I'll look here. Three chapters, four chapters, two chapters, and then three, and then five for the last one. So, and at the end of this episode, we are 84% of the way through the book. So we've got 16% of this book left, you guys.
So right close there. Yet so far.
Yet so far. Yet still more than a month away by the way that we record episodes. And after that, we move on to something else. Who knows? Music by Miracle of Sound.
I'm half convinced that you do the we're moving on to something else because you haven't figured it out yet.
Oh, I outlined everything long ago. Although I do actually need to add in some books on here. Part of the reason I haven't added any of the secret projects, I don't remember, is because there's going to be times I decided where we'll decide, do we want to read a certain secret project in between a couple Stormlight books? So maybe that's why I'm saying this, because I'm going to give you guys the option when we get to the end of this, like read one of these things, or maybe not. We'll have to see. It's just fun for me to keep these guys in the dark too, listener. That's all that I'm doing.
It really depends on how this book finishes.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Because if this is a massive cliffhanger, I'm gonna want to go straight into the next book.
That's fair.
Yeah, I mean, we had this conversation after, all right, if Lost Metal is heavy spoilerific, do you guys want to wait until after we've done other books? And it's like, no, we want to finish the series with these characters we've been following for the last few months.
Yeah. And yeah, there's I could definitely see that, you know, like, well, we've already been doing Stormlight and I wanted to find out what happened next. But I figure it's more likely like after two or three of these giant Stormlight books that you guys might be like, we're ready for a break from Stormlight for a minute.
Yeah.
So we'll see. We'll see what happens. But thanks, everybody, for listening. Thanks to our patrons and the people on the Discord. If you want to check out our Discord, you can send me a message. Somebody just sent a message on Patreon the other day saying, hey, give me a link to the Discord. Or you can find it on the link on our website, www.thesanderlanch.com, if you want to chat on the Discord. Remember, three chapters for next time. And wasing to the time of next. Colo, P.S. Fasher. Crabs Ahoy? Have I done that one? I don't know. Ghost of the Forest.